Hireby is a hiring solution for companies. So unlike StaffAM, which is a marketplace product and it requires both players, employers and job seekers, Hireby is only for employers. Fempower is an initiative that's very close to my heart, and this is something that I always tell I do for myself. Its mission is to empower 1 million women across the globe. What at this point I am doing, I am mentoring female founders who are building a tech company or a company related to tech.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EVN Disrupt podcast. My name is Nejdet Zadryan, and I'm the editor of the creative tech section here at EVN Report. Our guest this week was Luisa Avetisyan, the co-founder of StaffAM and Hireby. We spoke about her journey as a serial entrepreneur, the HR tech-related solutions that StaffAM and Hireby offer, as well as her recent initiative called Fempower, which has a mission to help 1 million women globally to build businesses. Thank you for listening. Luisa, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Nejdet. Thank you for inviting me.
I want to start by hearing a little bit about your journey. You're the founder of several companies and important initiatives, but I think maybe a lot of people know you through StaffAM, which is one of the leading platforms in Armenia for hiring. Tell us about how you got your start in entrepreneurship.
So I started my career when I was 17. So I started working from when I was a freshman at my university, and I started my career as a software engineer. Back then, like 20 years ago, there were not many companies where you could get an internship, and I was one of the lucky to get this internship. Of course, it was unpaid internship, and but I had a great opportunity to work with professional and very experienced software engineers who were building software for government, different government bodies. And so I started as a software engineer. Then I won a scholarship to study in the US. And then when I returned back to Armenia, I decided that, and that was my third year at the university, I need to work as well. And I had an internship for 8 months. It was a free unpaid internship. I worked for the National Postal Service of Armenia for their engineering team. And then later on, I got accepted. I got the job and joined the company. Right after I joined the company, I started to think about something of my own. So I was studying at a university. It was my master's degree for which I was studying.
In
computer science, yes. I have PhD in engineering. So I went up through, obtaining a PhD degree. And I'll talk about it a bit later. So when I came back, I got the job and I decided that this is not enough and my studies are not enough. I think I need something else as well. That's when I created my boutique small agency, digital agency. Back then, there was no mobile apps. There were no mobile apps or social media, etc. My team was building web websites and CRM systems to mm-hmm. support these websites. And I did that for a couple of years. I was doing some affiliate marketing as well on a global scale. It was very cool. It was very new. And many skills that I later on used to create StaffAM, I gained throughout that experience.
This is like late 2000s, I'm assuming?
Mid-2000s. Mid-2000s. Then I got a job offer from HSBC Bank. I thought it's a part-time job. Great, let's do it, because I could do 1,000 other things with my part-time job at HSBC. It was a e-channels manager position, so I would oversight website, internal intranet, which was a global one for HSBC, and it was very interesting and part of my overall scope of interest. But 20 days after getting the job offer and starting my job, HSBC leadership, my managers decided that no, it's time to quit everything, especially my postal service job, and I need to concentrate on my HSBC. There was so much to do there, and I was so lucky to actually spend 10 years at HSBC. I went there because it was a part-time job. I was never interested in banking industry. But then it happened, and those were really very, very productive 10 years. All my positions that I had at HSBC were new. So no one before that had that position. I was, you know, getting it was either a promotion or a transfer to another department. So that's when I transitioned from IT to business. But even though I have taken different positions like head of business development team, projects product officer, etc., I always, part of my job was always with software engineering, with information technologies, with projects, etc. And at HSBC, I was part of the first internet banking system implementation in Armenia. It was late 2000s, and HSBC was the first bank to have internet banking in Armenia. Then the first mobile banking application in banking system in Armenia. So all these experiences prepared me very well to at some point return to my entrepreneurship journey and dream. And those years well prepared me because naturally when I started to work for HSBC for on a full-time basis, I couldn't afford doing all those thousand things together. So in a nutshell, that was how I first transitioned from software engineering to business and then from corporate to entrepreneurship.
Was your manager's advice correct about needing to focus on one thing?
Yeah, I think when I transitioned from e-channels to business, I had a very good line manager, and he taught me a lot. And I think that if it wasn't to him, maybe my path would be different.
And then after that, is that when you pursued the PhD or did staff AM come?
So I started in 2011. So midway in working, like I was at HSBC for 4 years already. And why I didn't pursue my PhD right after graduating from master's degree, because I didn't want it to be very theoretical and those kind of stuff. I wanted it to be very practical. And even though it was a scientific work, I still wanted some, you know, real case to work on. By working at HSBC, I had this privilege because HSBC helped me to build my PhD thesis around financial engineering, financial, especially like credit risk. So my PhD thesis was about building a model for predicting credit risk and for portfolio optimization.
And this is like early 2010s?
Yes, early 2010s. I got my PhD in 2014, 15. So it was, it took me 4 years to, from start to, no, 3 years. From start to obtaining it. And it was very great because AI was just starting off. And even though I cannot say that it was built on AI, but the mathematical models and the foundation for the work could then be easily transformed to the next level. Right. And actually what I built on these models could be easily rebuilt with AI components already.
And that was right also just a few years after the financial crisis, which was largely because of faulty risk modeling.
I was at HSBC when the financial crisis began, and it was huge experience for me as well to witness everything firsthand, to have an insider view into what is going on, to see all those layoffs and all those, you know. And then later, when the market started to recover, this recovery was very slow, and again, it was tough as well. So it was beginning of 2010s, like 11, 12. But it was great to see how the market was, you know, developing and booming. And then this crisis just made it almost die. And then again, the takeoff. And now when COVID happened, and then later now for around 2 years, we see global recession in terms of VC and funding and IT companies, you already have this picture. Since I have already witnessed this once, I believe that it's going to, you know, take off again. And my approach is a bit more relaxed. So I witnessed it once. Then I always tell that, guys, it's going to be okay. So it happens
many ways,
all the time.
This is no different than the other times, you think?
Yes.
Yeah. I hope so. It seems like we're kind of on the way out of it, right? I mean, things are picking back up.
And yes.
We were seeing IPOs again this year. And,
Exactly. I'm very glad for that because it affected Armenia actually a lot.
For sure. Yeah. But it's actually, it's also exciting to see that the startups that raised, so many Armenian startups raised in 2021, their seed rounds, some of them Series A's. Now we're seeing the seed companies raising their Series A's this year. Mm-hmm. We already have two examples, Active Loop and Podcastle. Hopefully there are some more in the works. And then I think once we see some Series A's that raised in 2021 raise Series B's, that'll be a really exciting metric of showing that we're sort of back on track.
Yeah, fully agree with you.
Yeah. Okay. So then comes Staff AM.
Yeah. So I was still working at HSBC when I started working on Staff AM as well. So at the beginning, it was I was helping my brother and my co-founder. He was on full time, and I was helping him with my experience in different verticals. And then at some point, I needed to choose between continuing to work on Staff AM or staying at HSBC. And back then, I was head of customer value management department. I had a promotion recently, etc. But there was something inside that for the past 10 years was telling me, are you sure that you left your entrepreneurship journey and then joined corporate setting? Is it really what you are after? And is it your dream? So yes, we started in 2016 at the beginning, and then it took several months to build the entire thing and launch. And at the beginning of 2017, I left the bank to fully concentrate on Staff.am. Why we created it on the first place, because we, as I was helping my brother with his small outsource IT company, we always had this problem of small company struggling with their hiring effort. So we decided to create a platform that would be available to everyone with great IT and great customer support. And most importantly, with tools to help no matter what size companies to promote their employer brand. So employer brand was at the cornerstone, promoting employer brand was at the cornerstone of building Staff AM. And we had this mission 7 years ago that didn't change to date. And it was to see people happy when they find a job they dreamt of or they love, or to see companies hire talent that will help them to grow further. And whatever we did for the past 7 years, it all evolved around this main mission.
Explain what an employer brand is, because I think it's a term that's probably not familiar to most people.
Yeah. Employer brand is how your potential employees perceive your brand, your company's brand as an employer. For example, there can be a brand very popular, we all use that product, but how, for example, Apple, which I love its products, but as an employer, it is a good employer. Is it a caring employer? Do people recommend others, like do their employees recommend others to work for the company or not? So this is the employer brand, how you are perceived in the market by people who could potentially work for you or just in general for your market.
Right.
And why employer brand is important, especially today, because candidates, job seekers, individuals today are more selective, especially the experienced ones, the progressive ones, the ones that all employers are after. So they really want to see what it is to work for that company, how that company is different from others, whether they have, what values they have. And an interesting thing that we constantly witness is that for the same position, with same salary level and requirements, skills, etc., one company gets 50 applications or close to 100 applications, the other gets 10 or 15. And then when we monitor and see that either the company hasn't done a good job presenting themselves, like we provide free of charge tools, they can tell about them whatever they want on our platform, or if that's a company that is in the market for a long time, they have really a bad employer brand because they didn't work on their reputation and they didn't treat people well, they didn't have the interview process built correctly, etc. And our market is quite small. You can't afford, you know, doing things and then supposing that the market will go and forget that, you know, you were treating people not right. So in a nutshell, that's what employer brand is.
And especially when you look at the industry level, like the country itself is small, but then industries are even smaller as they're subsections of the whole economy, and everybody talks and everybody knows. So an important trend is that it's not just employees that are selling themselves to potential employers, but the potential employers themselves need to be selling themselves to the labor market.
Yes, exactly.
To become attractive.
Yes, exactly. Because as we say, it's a job seeker market rather than employer market. So job seekers, especially the experienced ones, are the ones who choose the employer.
Is that something that's here to stay, you think?
Yeah, I think. And for example, for the last 2 years or one and a half, we saw layoffs, etc., taking place in the Armenian market. But still, it didn't shift that much. So we had some, you know, decline in maybe employers had a bigger pool to choose from. But again, lots of people want to work for companies who share their values. And yes, I think it's here to stay.
Okay. And that's obviously great news for employees, I would say. Yeah. Which is, I think, probably... you always need a balance, but I think it's always better for the focus to be on that than the other way around. Because at the end of the day, the power holders are the employers.
Right? And if we compare the number of companies that were hiring in Armenia like 7 years ago when we entered the market, and I mean both in terms of number of positions and number of companies. Now we have a lot more companies, like a lot more IT companies, agencies, service providers, and while the applicant pool didn't change much. So that is why applicants now, candidates, have more choice to, you know, to go with this or that company.
Do you think platforms like StaffAM have helped bring that culture to Armenia of employers actually caring about their employer brand and selling themselves to employees, or has it been a natural phenomenon?
I think, yes, definitely. We have our, you know, strong influence on that. Of course, the natural growth or natural shift towards candidates choosing their employers, that happened as well. But as StaffAM, we talked a lot about employers. We have a special division that, you know, covers interesting stories and news and talks with CEOs, etc. And this is how we brought the cultures of employers to the market, to show them that, you know, this company has great culture. They don't have much time to talk about it, but then we have, and we have the capability, and we have the audience. And this is why our audience, like StaffAM's audience, is a bit different from other similar platforms or audiences, because I think that our audience is more educated. They know how to choose an employer, and we do a lot of education to do to reach that. For example, last year we launched an online free of charge online course called 4C, Complete Career Certification Course. And like 30% of the course, we were talking how to do research on the company, how to understand this is your potential employer, how to apply, and like how to accept offer, etc. So yes, definitely, without you know, being boasting, I can say that we had our fair share in this.
Fantastic. How many jobs are posted on StaffAM annually?
Around 20,000 jobs, like, were posted in 2023, mm-hmm. and this number keeps on growing mm-hmm. on a year-on-year basis, even though last year we had decline in significant decline in IT jobs.
Yeah.
But then other industries were growing rapidly, so we remained on the same level.
Is there one industry that's more represented on the platform than others?
IT is still the leading industry. For software engineering is on the third position as a category of jobs. And in 2023, it was the first time that this happened. Mm. Before that, it was on the first, like it was the top position. Yeah. Around 25% of all our positions were software engineering. But IT is definitely the most represented industry, followed by banking and finance. Then we have retail companies doing import, export, mm-hmm. Trade, and then production, then education. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, in this order.
So it's fairly representative of the economy,
yeah,
I would say.
Yeah.
You guys put out an annual report every year on sort of the state of the labor market in Armenia. In the most recent report that covered 2023, mm-hmm. comparing it with previous years, what are some general trends you notice in the Armenian labor market?
Yeah, so the first trend, as I said, was the decline of software engineering jobs, and not just software engineering, any vertical related to IT.
So product management,
yes, things even like that. Tech recruiters.
Right.
So that affected tech recruiter jobs as well. But on the contrary, banking jobs were like increased around 20%, even though we would think that our banking industry is quite established.
Yeah.
But still some banks kept growing very in a high rate, so they hired a lot. Jobs in regions, their activity increased as well, and this is a good thing. If we compare 2021 with 2023, the jobs in regions grew from 5% to around 17% of being, you know, from total pool. And this is a good thing because we see market growing not just in Armenia, in Yerevan, but also in regions.
Yeah.
And we really need that country-wise. Another trend was that there was a shift in soft skills as we compare to 2022. And how we assess this? We assess job descriptions that are posted on Staff.am and the skills that they require. And especially on soft skills side, which are like communication, leadership, etc., this range of skills, it was interesting to see the change in structure. And this is also due to banking being the leading industry or position, because on the first place it was banking and credit related jobs, mm-hmm. like credit officers,
yeah.
banking advisors, etc. Compared to last year where the leading position was software engineering. So it was interesting to observe that with the market leader change, shift, the skills, especially soft skills, that this shift is obvious as well. And some other trends that I can say that, like, in 2022 and part of 2023, the market was highly influenced by the influx of Russian workforce. Mm-hmm. But in 2023, we saw that market leveled in that mm-hmm. perspective, and no further changes or shifts or growths and falls happened.
Mm.
So that's another trend that that was interesting to observe.
So those who came and stayed have stayed and are working, and those who left have left, but not many are coming anymore.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We didn't see many people coming in 2020, and not many, and actually no major companies actually opening.
Right. All that happened in 2022.
Yes.
And yeah. Is there something quantifiable that you've noticed from the flight that happened in 2022? Is there something noticeable long-term from the Russians coming in 2022?
Yeah, I think very important changes happened to our hospitality industry that may be from the first sight not obvious, but I think that those who were working in software engineering or IT-related professions, they actually mainly came with their companies. Yeah. They didn't, very few of them came here to look for a job.
Right.
But so they didn't change much. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, when we're talking about people who were outside of this main IT, you know, industry, they came, they created interesting restaurants, interesting formats yeah. of cafes, yeah. hospitality, kind of stuff, events. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, changed our landscape forever.
Yeah.
Maybe at a later stage, we will understand, like look back, assess and understand that IT industry was also affected by this influx. But at the moment, I don't see many companies that were like startups that were yeah. created in Armenia by people who came to Armenia. But right, like at the beginning, I met many talented startupers who came here from Russia, and they had their ideas. They had some teams already or MVPs, but I don't see them, you know, very active today, like raising yeah. funds or pitching at some at different events. So in that perspective, I think the most influenced industry is hospitality
and services.
Services, yeah. Yeah, yeah, hospitality and services, because interesting formats were born yeah. out of this influx, and I'm very glad for that. And also, people who came to Armenia to stay here, they also changed, like increased the consumption of the services, yeah. like wine tours,
right.
I don't know, concerts, etc. So in that perspective, I think most of the part like happened in that area.
Yeah.
That industry.
I completely agree that that's been a really positive. It's a small addition to Yerevan's diversity, you would
yes.
say.
Yeah.
And with that, I think has brought significant cultural change in the service industry.
Yeah, something that we really yeah. needed,
yeah.
actually.
Yeah. I wasn't here for it then, but I always hear that when the Syrian Armenians moved in large numbers to Armenia, the same thing happened yes. with cuisine and things like
yes,
that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Not just cuisine, but also services for like skilled stuff, like mm-hmm. hairdressers yeah. and mechanics, et cetera,
yeah.
et cetera. They really changed the landscape.
Yeah.
And also in terms of businesses, especially small businesses, they created many small businesses, mm-hmm. which then grew to become significant for the Armenian market.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting to see the positive sides of diversity in real time. And it's extremely noticeable in Armenia because of how homogenous of a society we are, whereas just some small injection creates such mm-hmm. visible mm-hmm. things, where in more multicultural societies, it's harder to actually
yes.
notice the tangible effect
exactly.
of it. Yeah. On the IT side, at the very beginning, when in large numbers of Russians were moving to Armenia, and most of them were high-skilled, or I don't know about most, but at least it was perceived that way, that a lot of them were high-skilled tech workers. The hope was that some important roles within Armenian companies that couldn't be hired within Armenia, like really senior engineering people, engineering management people, things of that nature, would be able to be filled by this new talent group. I personally haven't noticed that. And I guess what you're saying is sort of confirming that didn't really happen. And it's also a shame that we didn't necessarily grab a lot of that entrepreneurial talent that could have come, or maybe came and didn't stay. But one of the positives, I guess, is that companies like Miro and NVIDIA especially, and Yandex now have several hundred people,
yes.
person offices mm-hmm. here.
Yeah, and many others like Vim Software, they
yeah.
have very huge
yeah.
Team here. And a bit smaller, like Align Technologies, Quantori,
yeah.
et cetera. So this was really good news for us,
yeah.
even if all those engineers stay with their companies, they're still part of the community
yeah.
here. And they are very active in different events. They're contributing, et cetera.
For sure, yeah.
So it's a good story for us
yeah.
anyway.
And even if a significant number of their employees leave, presumably their offices won't leave as easily, and a lot of jobs might open up for the local talent pool, right?
Yeah.
So let's move on to your second venture. Actually, I guess it's not technically your second in your line, but what maybe you're known for today, which is HireBee. Tell us what HireBee is.
Yeah, HireBee is a hiring solution for companies. So unlike StaffAM, which is a marketplace product and it requires both players, employers, and job seekers, HireBee is only for employers. Mm-hmm. So that's a software as a solution service, and we help companies to hire talent on a global scale. So they can be based in New York and hire from Poland, or based in Australia and hire from Argentina, etc. So HireBee covers the entire value chain of recruitment. We cover the recruitment part and partially the onboarding process. And why we started this, HireBee was born in 2020 during COVID. Mm-hmm. When we understood that hiring is going to change forever. The global hiring, freelance, and remote work are here to stay, and companies would look for ways to optimize their teams, both cost from cost perspective and from productiveness, effectiveness perspective. And we used our expertise that our team had managing, launching and managing Staff.am, and also our experience from Kazakhstan market where Staff.am entered a year ago. And we decided that our next step or next product is going to solve exactly that problem with hiring. We have Armenian customers as well, like large banks and Central Bank mm-hmm. of Armenia is our customer, IT companies, educational companies, etc. And we are very proud to bring the international standards in Armenia with Armenian prices. Mm-hmm. With HireBee's next level is building more modules into it, like expanding the onboarding part, adding new modules into it. It's very, even though both HireBee and StaffAM are in HR tech, but are very different from each other, both in terms of marketing, both in terms of customer building. And it's very interesting to do something different while staying within the same domain. We were part of UC Berkeley's SkyDeck program, and it was a great experience for us to interact and to see, to work with people firsthand who were mm-hmm. our potential users. By the way, we have a special offering for startups, and those that meet certain criteria can use HireBee free of charge. We have been there. We know how difficult it is when you're just starting, mm-hmm. you're doing hiring, but you don't have the funds to afford HR solution, and HR paying for HR is like on the down the list. Right. It's people, companies don't tend to, you know, buy very high check products. So in that perspective, we are building HireBee to cater to more international needs of our customers, and our like future mission and our vision in terms of developing HireBee is making it a truly international platform.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, you mentioned that companies can recruit internationally with mm-hmm. HireBee. So, for example, some U.S. firm can hire like an individual from, let's say, Poland or Armenia, or is it teams that they're looking to recruit in those countries?
No, they can individuals. So on an individual basis. And how we do it, we use different distribution platforms in different countries. Hmm. Like in Armenia, it would be Staff.am. In other countries, like in the US, it would be Indeed, Monster, mm-hmm. ZipRecruiter, etc. In Poland, it would be their platforms, etc. So what we do is we're connected with all these platforms. Right. And whenever someone wants to hire, we provide this link to mm-hmm. the platforms, and then all applications are then back and collected into one place, which provides all the tools to collaborate with hiring managers, right. even though they would be like in different time zones, speaking different languages. So it's more of like a hiring and collaboration and mm-hmm. then onboarding all built into one to help companies streamline their hiring processes.
And is it designed to for sort of remote first work?
Not necessarily, because like our Armenian customers mainly use it for their in-house HR teams and hiring office or full-time employees. But I think like in overseas customers, they are more flexible in that perspective because we work with companies with up to 5,000 employees. And then there are many mid or small companies like 500 employees, 700 employees, 300 employees. And many of them fall in this, you know, remote or hybrid category. And they are absolutely comfortable working with it.
Right. What are some, you mentioned COVID earlier, what are some of the permanent labor market changes that have come after COVID? Because there's a lot of talk now about sort of remote was a few years of a trend, but now it's going back to most companies demanding in person and stuff. What are some permanent changes that you've observed?
I think the most important change, it was a shift of mindset shift, that work is not everything in our life. Especially in some markets like the U.S., which had more, you know, tough culture and overworked hours, etc., people's mindsets changed, and it happened in Armenia as well. And simultaneously, a new generation of workforce entered into labor market. So these two things coincided and created very important new approach to work that it's not my everything. For example, if I compare my generation, like millennials, with Generation Z, that's a specific change and specific difference that I see. Right. I'm not telling this is good or this is bad. My generation, for my generation, work was I can't say everything, but very important part of feeling accomplished.
Right. Fulfilled.
Fulfilled. Yeah. But now it changed. And why companies are failing or struggling to bring back employees to offices, that's because they felt the freedom of working from wherever they want. And now work is not their first priority in life. There are other things. They don't care for that much money to work, to earn. So that's an important mindset shift overall, because we saw great resignation, then wanting to come back to office, etc. For Armenia, that's also the case. But I think the most important influence that our workforce saw was what happened with Artsakh. We don't talk about it very much, but I think that, and I went into the topic a lot, I spoke to psychology experts, etc. We even wrote a series of articles on Staff Media, our media platform. We are in some kind of burnout that we don't feel, we don't treat it, we don't, you know, work with it to get rid of it. But nationwide, we are in a burnout that also keeps us from being at our best, like effective. It affects our productivity, etc. I hope that it will, you know, decrease if nothing new will happen to us. But that's an important aspect. Everybody talks about increasing our productivity, using digital tools to do, you know, the same work in 5 hours instead of 15, but very few reflect on mental health aspects that are left out. So I think that for Armenia, that's a very important thing. And it's interesting when I compare diaspora Armenians who are also very involved with Armenia, care a lot, etc. But the difference is that when you are here, you live here, that burnout is affecting you While if you don't live here, but still, you know, help Armenia and get involved, etc., that doesn't affect you. So that's an observation. It's still a work in progress. I really want to go deep to understand, is it really a burnout or it was a stress, PTSD? It's here to stay. Will it affect our way of how we function and work going forward? We still need time to pass and then lots of research to do to understand how it affected us.
It's hard to imagine it not affecting it, though, because even if you set aside the emotional attachment Armenians have to their country, the people who are suffering, et cetera, like a large part of work is tied to planning your future, right? Like that's why you get an income, that's why you make money, like you buy a house, that house becomes the sort of financial foundation of your family, et cetera, et cetera. But when you have like a series of catastrophes every year, it's hard to think like, well, in 5 years, is anything I'm doing even going to matter because I might lose everything, right? So
Exactly. Yeah. My friend wanted to build a house for like 5 years, since 5 years. And a couple of weeks ago, I met him and he started to actually build that house. And I said, you were like, why now? You had the land for a long time. And he said that for the past 5 years, I was thinking that something will happen. Okay, let's not start. And then I got sick of these fears and waiting. And I decided it's okay, no matter what, I'm building that house. Maybe, yes, I fully agree with you. And our long-term planning is like, mine is maximum 6 months. And that's very short for me, very, very short for me. For some of people in my network, it's even shorter. I have a friend who, when I'm inviting her for an event like in June, she says, wow, guys, you are so optimistic. Are you sure you're going to make it? But I think on the contrary, we need to change that and we need to start planning in advance. Maybe if we plan and we say, okay, I built this house here and I'm going to live here, maybe that will change something, because living in this fear and every second knowing that you can lose whatever you want, that makes you just to run, just take your stuff and run. So as someone who built a house in Armenia and doesn't want to, you know, live it, I sometimes feel that house like stick me to this land, and maybe if we build more houses, it will help us to build a country that is strong and no one can, you know, hurt it.
Even at the individual level, I agree. I completely agree with you. It's important, but more important would be for that level of thinking to be steeped in leadership within the country.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. That's the one that would actually make a difference.
Yeah.
Let's talk about FemPower. Tell me what FemPower is.
FemPower is an initiative that's very close to my heart, and this is something that I always tell I do for myself. Even though I enjoy Staff AM and HireB experiences a lot, I don't perceive them as a job. But FemPower is a social initiative. Its mission is to empower 1 million women across the globe. What at this point I am doing, and I have been doing this for past 2 years, I am mentoring female founders who are building a tech company or a company related to tech. So when they have questions about raising funds, about pitching, about product building, marketing, team recruitment and leadership management. So anything that is within my scope, I conduct. How the process works is they register, we set a date. That's a 1 hour mentorship session. It's free of charge. Mm-hmm. And then later on, we keep in touch. So whenever they have any questions or whenever they want to, you know, they have built some new features, they want to ask my opinion, etc., I meet with them as much as my time allows. Also within the scope of FemPower, I am cooperating with organizations like AUA's EPIC, again on a volunteer basis, to mentor their teams as well. And I always choose teams where at least one female founder is. So in terms of Fempower, I have very big plans, and I just wish I had more time to work on this. But I'm working towards, you know, freeing up some time, because there is so much to do. Armenian women have very good potential of building tech companies. Mm-hmm. They have done really good for the past couple of years building other industry companies, small businesses, etc. But they really have this true power, both in science and in tech, to build something really meaningful, something that will be, that will put Armenia as a, not just like a country where females are not just active in IT companies as software engineers or just workforce, but also startup founders. So that's the main mission behind it. And whenever I am invited to share about Fempower, I always invite organizations, individuals, companies who would like to cooperate in that perspective, because I'm very open to that cooperations. And I saw some very interesting success stories for my mentees. I'm not saying that's all my influence, but still, like, a small part was done by me. So we'll be happy to cooperate in that part.
A little earlier, you mentioned that women have done a great job of building up other industries by starting companies and businesses in those sectors, but not as much yet in the tech industry. What are some industries in which there's the most amount of, I guess, female founded businesses in Armenia?
I think fashion. They have done really great in fashion, in producing like teas and, you know, those kinds of things, like candle production, then a bit bigger, like family hospitality chains or restaurants, etc. So the services, like consulting firms or HR consulting, etc. So in that perspective, we've done a good job. But in tech, we don't even, I think there are very few companies with female only founders. So we need more like this. I'm not saying that they just need to do it themselves. It's great when you have the balance, but they need to have a leading role. So they need not just be the third or fourth co-founder who doesn't even do the decision making, but like have a leading role and having their say. So that's when we can tell that we have good female representation in tech startup ecosystem.
Before we wrap up, there's one thing I'm really curious about on your journey. Over the last few years, I've tried to in my life reduce the number of sort of initiatives that I'm involved in directly. And you're one of the few people that have come on that you're not only a serial entrepreneur, but you're still actively involved. We didn't even mention you own a wine company. So you're involved in all these different businesses. You have a leading role in them, and they all seem to be thriving. Why do four or five things instead of focusing all your effort on one? Do you think it's just a matter of that's how you're wired, or what do you think it is that brings you to want to do so many different things?
Yeah, I think it's in my DNA. Yeah. I can't do one thing. It's and if I do only one thing, like Stuff AM, it doesn't necessarily mean that Stuff AM will double, triple, or you know, no. I think that when I'm involved in different things, especially because Stuff AM and HireBee, they are very close in terms of, you know, managing them, etc. We can consider that even though they are two different companies, two different products, but we can consider them as one. But what? But with Fempower, I utilize my desire to help. So this is how I help people. And with wines, this is something that helps me to think differently. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this to help my brain to think differently. And I wrote a post on LinkedIn. Everyone loved it. And I explained how launching Musa Wines helped me solve my everyday job problems more creatively. Mm. And this is something that I actually recommend to everyone. If you go deeper into your day structure, you'll understand that you're spending a lot of time. You're just wasting your time in vain. I'm not wasting my time. I don't, my time is scheduled, but not in a maniac way, but in a way that I really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And instead of, you know, doing like lots of time on social media, which I don't watch TV, I don't party that much, etc. Instead of that, I launched a wine business. So it's not that, yes.
It's fantastic. I love the way you put it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm very openly telling that. And when we were starting and meeting with fellow winemakers or vendors from whom we would buy bottles, corks, labels, etc., they were treating me like a first-time unexperienced someone, not, I can't say businesswoman, someone. Mm-hmm. Especially winemaking is a male-dominant business anyway. And then after that, those meetings, I was telling my husband, do they know that I'm not a beginner and that the story with taxi drivers, they don't know about my businesses in Russia. So they don't know about my businesses in tech. Right. But that's interesting to rediscover yourself from the scratch. Because at some point when you have built something that works, that is within the, you know, it's an established something, you forget your being hungry and being foolish. And why I started Musa Wines, and that's not the final or the last endeavor that I will be in, to just remember myself, my brain, that you need to reinvent yourself all the time. You need to, you know, chase this all the time.
Yeah.
And also, that's a very noble business, not in terms of industry and its players, but as something that what we do is we are helping Armenia, all winemakers, I'm not talking about Musa, all my winemakers are helping the country to revive its power, once powerful position as a cradle of winemaking. Mm-hmm. So I am treating Musa Wines as something that I'm doing for my country, like it's a patriotic or something. And that helps a lot. So I don't have weekends. Now it's a very a busy time for winemaking. It's April, May, and then September, October. I work without weekends, but that's great. Right. I feel really fulfilled, and that's how I keep moving on.
That's fantastic. I'm curious though, like, presumably Staff AM had to mature to a point where you felt comfortable taking some time away from Staff AM to give to Higher Bee, and then probably the same process for FemPower and Musa Wines. At what point do you feel like it's time to bring a new member into the family of your efforts?
So with Higher Bee, actually, for several months, I was more focused on Higher Bee, but I never left Staff AM fully.
Right.
So like I wasn't doing the operational stuff, everyday management, etc. So I could concentrate on Higher Bee more. Also, now Staff AM is a lot bigger than 4 years ago because now we are an ecosystem. We have four products, Staff AM that everybody knows. Staff Media is our media platform with its own brand branding and platform, etc. Then it's Career Factory. This is our educational direction. And from Monday, we're starting our sales training, offline sales training. And then the fourth one is Compass by Staff AM. This is our analytical division. We do salary analysis, market analysis, etc. So now it's a lot bigger. Back then, it was easier to just spend several months, around 8-9 months, bringing Higher Bee to some point where others would take and work on it. And now my involvement is more on Staff AM side and a lot less on Higher Bee because my brother is taking care of Higher Bee's operational and other aspects. I'm more of like co-founder there, advisor on key things, etc. But on Staff AM now, we have grown to the point that we need to hire person who would oversight our operations so that I can help the company to grow further. While with Musa Wines, I never took time off Staff AM or anything else that I was doing to go and do Musa Wines. I have, it's like my side hustle.
Right.
And I did it during my free time. And also being an entrepreneur and your own boss has a privilege. No one tracks your time, so you can go do something midday and then in the evening or during your weekends, you can do that. So if I had more time, like 30 hours per day, I would start something new as well, because that's where I thrive. I like launching new things and then putting it on operations, then handing it over to someone who could then take and but never leaving the oversight, because that's where the problems occur.
Right.
When you are, you know, relaxed, that the other person will take care of your baby, that doesn't happen.
Right, right. That's super inspirational. Let's wrap up by asking sort of our traditional question. Since you're involved in two really important companies within the HR and I would say like the labor market space, I guess, where do you hope to see Armenia's labor market in 5 years? And what's an important trend that you would be happy to see in 2029?
I would really, really love to see more people moving to Armenia from our diaspora. That's something I have been talking about for a couple of years already, because that makes a lot of difference for our country. So whether these are highly experienced C-level managers from top companies or people who have their small workshop of, you know, car mechanics, etc., we really need this influx of people who care for Armenia and are ready to settle at least for 5 years. So first of all, I want to see Armenia in a situation or in a stage, in a state where diaspora Armenians will feel comfortable and welcomed to come here and to, you know, live here and work here. First, that. The second, I would love to see more educated young people from regions not living Armenia for, you know, work in CIS countries, but staying here, being well educated, valuing education, and building companies or working for companies to expand our economy, because we are losing so much talent in terms of young men who are, you know, who are graduating from school, then completing the army service, and then they leave the country with their fathers. So that's very destructive for us. So I want this guys to stay here, to thrive here, to create families and businesses, etc. That's the second thing. And the third thing, I would love to see more international companies coming to Armenia and opening branches, because first they will, because they will support these two wishes that I have. So more places to work and more opportunities, workplaces, and more diaspora people coming to Armenia. So I think these are the three things that I hope to see in 5 years. And it's all doable, I think. That's not something to just to dream about. We really need this diversity. We have, as you said, a very homogeneous nation, and that doesn't help us in many, many situations. We need to be more diverse, more vibrant, more open to new ideas and new opportunities. So absolutely. I think this is it.
Luisa, thank you so much for the conversation today.
Thank you. Thank you, Nurdet Can.